Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown! Keenan Allen, what a great...
My goal is not to break you, my goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
8-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has night. Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
A rough loss, a tough loss. Either way you spin it, the win streak comes to a grinding halt as the Los Angeles Chargers go down 30-23 to the Baltimore Ravens on Monday Night Football at SoFi Stadium. The team sat at 7-4, still well in playoff contention with a two-game buffer over the Colts and the Dolphins, holding the tiebreaker over the Broncos. But John takes the Harbaugh Bowl to 3-0, and you are in the right place to hear how it all went down on the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. Andy here, and I've got both my boys back, Jack and Alistair, joining me. And gents, a loss always hurts, but the Bolts did show up for a good portion of this game and took it to the Ravens early. Certainly wasn't a total disaster that left us feeling completely flat, but it's good to have both of you in the studio with me again. So, Jack, wherever you'd like to start us off, mate, let's get into it.
Oh, okay. Well, I am back from my quick sojourn away by having some sort of weird food poisoning. So, I was a bit of a shame that I missed out on the Bengals recap. I was really excited to do that, I must admit, because it was a wonderful game. So I get stuck with starting off a loss. Great.
Do you feel like instituting some defamation proceedings? Because I know last week Andy and I had a bit of fun ripping you left, right, and center.
What goes around comes around, and when the cat's away, the mice come out to play. That's how I've always seen something like that. Where to start? I think I'll start with how I feel. And perhaps it might be a little bit different to a majority of what I've seen on places like StormCloud and Twitter and things about the loss. This probably was a game that I wasn't particularly emotional about. I was watching it and I did feel like we gave as much as we copped as well. I didn't think Lamar Jackson played out of his mind. I didn't think the Ravens played incredibly well. We played incredibly poorly. It was just two fairly good teams going against one another. And I didn't think the Chargers completely capitulated either. Yes, there were some key mistakes and things that I'm sure we're going to get into. But in terms of what I kind of thought at a macro level was, you've got the Baltimore Ravens who have had, organizational stability, great drafting. They have an identity. They know what they're doing. They're well into the Lamar Jackson era. Then you've got year one, Harbaugh, Ortiz. The team is kind of coming together, but eventually I think that the good teams like that will show us out a little bit. So I wasn't super disappointed. I would have loved to win, but 23-30, playing like we did where we're at, I wasn't too upset. That's where I'm at.
I'm in the same spot because you look at where we are in this rebuild, turning over a roster wholeheartedly. We are trying to emulate the Ravens. Not only are we signing all their ex-players and coaches, but we're adopting similar philosophies. So it makes sense that they're a few years ahead of us in that process. And it was those key moments in the game where they came up on top. I was trying to think, boys, about maybe instead of bigger picture, what was the difference in this game? And since we've been talking to our British friend Ryan Watkins from StormCloud and the Powder Keg podcast with Kyle D, getting so many shout outs on this show, we're going to be asking for royalties soon. I've joked. But I was thinking that the Brits for the Paris Olympics this year, they had this theme song for their Olympians called Be Brave and Be Bold. And shit out song, shocking song. But the Ravens were bold and brave in this game. And really, it was those fourth down calls. There were three of them. There was the fourth and one from the 16 of Baltimore. There was the fourth and one from the 39 of Baltimore in the third quarter when the score was 17-16. Derrick Henry, boom, 1 yard on the same drive to start the fourth quarter. Fourth and one from our 25. Again, Henry, boom. 1 yard. So they were bold and brave. And I sit there as the analytics guy thinking, Jim, I like that you've been more aggressive yourself. Are you watching John and some of the stuff he's doing here? And maybe that's something you would be minded to emulate in the future. Now, I'll just say for all their pomp, the Brits actually won 4 fewer gold medals than Australia, despite having 40 million more people than us. But let bygones be bygones. Jack, you've been known to masquerade as a Brit from time to time. Do you agree with that characterization that the Ravens were bolder and braver in this game?
Absolutely. But the other Harbaugh can afford to be like that because he's got trust in his team. You've got Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. You've got a fairly good offensive line. You've got weapons. And you're also away from home. You've got not much to lose. So again, dare I say, I'm going to bring it back to the macro and go, yeah, of course you're going to do it. Assert your will, dominate, go for it on fourth down. Because the Chargers were playing pretty well. It was a pretty good first half from us. And then again, this narrative where we don't do much in the second half. They were more bold. And I think maybe our brother took some notes and went, okay, all right, I see what you're doing there. But you look at the players that are executing their fourth down, then you look at the players that we have and go, okay, fair enough. You're Mark Andrews. You know, we don't have a guy like that. You're Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson running. We don't have the big boys on the inside. You know, I definitely thought that, you know, you look at the Ravens offensive line and go, those guards are big guys. They're big, big men. So, yeah, most definitely. Andy, where did you sort of fit with this whole game? And any responses to what we've said?
Yeah, we'll get into that. I left social media alone because when I heard that it was all doom and gloom, I thought, let's be a little bit realistic here. We're 7-3 going into this game. We've got a new head coach, and usually I heard it put really well the other day. Usually you talk about a team being a coach away or a head coach, or a quarterback away from being a contender. We've got the quarterback, we've got the head coach, but as Al said earlier, we're rebuilding the team. And there's a lot of pieces that are still not quite right, not in the right spot. So it's not a 1 year fix everything immediately and we go 13-4 and everyone's happy. Like it's just not a realistic thing. So I think if you live in the moment outside of that mindset, you can't look at this game and sure, the 30-23 scoreline might have been a little bit flattering the way that, you know, we scored late in the game, but we had our opportunities. If you look on paper, Lamar throws 177 pass yards, 8 carries for 15 yards. You're feeling, you'll take that, wouldn't you? You're taking that every day of the week. The guy's on fire this year, MVP, almost better than that 2019 season that he had where he won it. So look, I'm disappointing, always disappointed to lose, but I'm definitely not feeling this is the be all and end all. And it is unfortunate that we've seemed to come up short against teams with winning records and those contenders. It just sort of, it does indicate that we might not be where we need to be this year. We're like a rung or two below those true contender spots. Sometimes that's a bitter pill to swallow. You win 4 games in a row and you start feeling big. But Jack, I don't want to nitpick what you said, but I think John certainly has the trust in his players and he believes in the players to execute what he wants. Jim certainly has the trust from his players, but we don't have the cattle. And we've alluded to it heaps, offline, online. We just don't have those pieces yet to be able to execute that aggressive mindset in the moment because we don't have a Mark Andrews, we don't have a Derrick Henry just bowling guys over on 4th-and-1 to be able to execute that kind of that game style. So I don't think it's the be all and end all and cause for burn the house down, but it's disappointing to lose. So
well, usually we now kind of go in a meticulous fashion, offense, defense, very linear. Let's get away from the linear. Let's go Christopher Nolan. That being the case, if we think that this is not the type of season that necessarily leads to great results, is that how we feel? The obvious problem that we all probably agree is the wide receiver room and we can get into Quentin Johnston and what happened to him. But it wasn't just Quentin Johnston. You do have Jalen Reagor out there, and you've got DJ Chark inactive, and Ladd McConkey's the reliable guy, but Josh Palmer is kind of 50-50. Sometimes he looks great, other times not so much. Either of you can answer it. Do we think this is the fatal flaw? So I've always said you've got a great head coach, you've got Justin Herbert, you've got offensive tackles, you've got a great defense. You can win the Super Bowl. Having seen this game against the Ravens, do we think now it's actually impossible to win the Super Bowl this year? That is too much of a fatal flaw at the skill position.
I'll have a go at answering that. I think greatness can overcome a lot, but greatness can't overcome just basic skill errors. And to Quentin Johnston's defense, it's the only game he's had this year that he's looked that's happened. I just hope that he can overcome the criticism that's quite fairly come his way this week. Ladd McConkey's been fine. I don't know what's going on with DJ Chark because Reagor is beating him out for a spot, so I'm not sure what the hell's going on there. And the tight end room is the tight end room. Rome isn't built in a day. I still think that Greg Roman has enough in his kit bag to perhaps challenge with the wide receiver group. I still feel like he is trying his best with what he's got. And players are getting open. Like that drop that QJ had when he was going to go to the house, perhaps. And you could see the reaction on Greg Roman.
Oh, no.
Roman doesn't give much. You could see he leans back and just goes, whoa. Just a couple of things that I've heard throughout the week. I heard someone say that the Chargers were actually quite successful from what they call nub formations. I'm not sure if you guys had heard this, but they had 8 yards per play from nub formations in the first half, which was very successful for Justin Herbert. He threw 3 for 5 on passes 15 yards or more. But
can you define what a nub?
Yeah, so I will. Yeah. So on one side, an offense has multiple receivers. While on the other side, it's a clear running formation. So nub formations force the defense to acknowledge the true run side while also defending multiple receiver formations. And that's especially effective when you're doing quite a heavy RPO game because you're really selling the run and then the defense is going, oh, what's going to go on here? So they've got to go defend the pass or defend the run. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And the other thing that I thought was interesting, just listening to some analysis and looking what's going on this week, is that 3 of the big explosive plays in the first half came from stacked alignments, including that really big 3rd and 13, I think, that led to the field goal. So like a stacked alignment, from what I understand, creates one receiver sort of lines up behind the other to create a clear throwing window. So, from that, I think Roman is doing an okay job. Is it a fatal flaw? You can't be dropping catches like that. Plain and simple. What's your thought, Al?
I'll let Andy chime in first.
I was just going to ask, Jack, was the nub formation, was that stuff predominantly in the first half that you noticed? Yeah, okay.
Correct.
So yeah. What I noticed was, and it's becoming, you know, relatively, like we spoke earlier on in the year where the sort of the start of the game might be a little slower and, or we blamed like once the offense got off script that they started to struggle. And I think Roman is doing a pretty good job. Like, you know, when we get play action firing off, we've got Gus Edwards, you know, hitting 6-7 yards on first down runs. Dobbins is the perfect kind of complement to that. But then after that, and we go up 10-0, 10-0 to sort of start the first quarter and a half. And then it sort of fell off once we're off script and you're relying on the playmakers to achieve and their output. And it just kind of wasn't working. Obviously Dobbins goes down and we'll talk about the impact that he had or didn't have, and what that meant for the passing game, the play action, all that sort of stuff. And the things that sort of disappeared from the playbook because of that. But I think, yeah, it just goes back to not having the cattle to sort of achieve what Roman wants to do, because to start out with, he does a great job, but then it does fall away. We stumble and the second half just kind of looks like a little bit of a wet tissue. So it's It's unfortunate.
I was just going to, before you go, I was just going to say, we are missing, and I thought very much in the second half, we just don't have a guy, and when I say, when I mean a guy, a wide receiver, a tight end, or a running back that can create separation and just win. Like, there's no winners, you know, outright winners. Right. Ladd McConkey is a winner, but he's also relying on the scheme to get him open because of his size. We don't have anyone that just wins, like a true X receiver. And I think that's something that perhaps is the fatal flaw of this team this year.
I think that's a little bit unfair on McConkey. I think his route running and his ability to sort of turn on a dime is a really impressive. Oh, we got another owl. What's going on this here? doing funny business. His ability to sort of to run routes, his foot speed, all those sort of things is pretty exceptional. What was also impressive as well that I noticed from McConkey's game is that he is protecting himself a lot more. Don't know whether he's listening to the show or it's just widespread criticism about how he just gets hit, but he was, you know, falling down nearing the point of contact, which is fine. Like, if you're not going to get
very
out there.
Very Keenan Allen. Very smart.
So I'm impressed.
I might have missed something, but the comment I was going to make was we've got to be careful not to be seen as Greg Roman apologists in a way, but I find it very interesting because if you're just looking at first half and second half splits, we know that in the first half we rank 14th in the NFL in points scored. In the second half, we rank 30th. Similar kind of splits in EPA per play. I think context has mattered more than your usual season here. I feel like there've been games like the Pittsburgh one, where in the second half you had serious injuries to deal with, like a Justin Herbert, like Rashawn Slater. There've been games where, you know, we are quite a fair bit behind on the scoreline, and all of a sudden that lack of wide receivers has really come to prominence. And some of it I just don't think has been scheme. I feel like this is another game, right? J.K. Dobbins comes out, which seriously limited our rush attack, limited dump off passes out of the backfield. And then guys are getting open. Guys are dropping balls. They're getting open, but dropping the ball. And I'm not saying Greg Roman is a maestro as an offensive coordinator. I have seen some lists that say he's the worst OC in the NFL. No way. The guy is a top 5 to top 10 run designer. That in itself drags you out of the bottom. And I see enough from the passing game. I know Justin Herbert carries it a lot, but we've never had a high average depth of target through Herbert's career. Play action works. We're getting more kind of deep completions. It's not perfect, but I'm probably more positive on Greg Roman than a lot of the consensus opinion, at least at this stage. That doesn't mean there's not room for improvement, but tell me if you disagree, guys. Jack, I didn't think it was the play calling in this game in the second half that led to the outcome that ensued.
No, I've never, and I have come out on this podcast and said I'm not going to judge Greg Roman until the end of the year. Like whether he's good or he's bad, he's terrible, get rid of him. You've just got to give him time. The development of Justin Herbert is one thing that you've got that Greg Roman can hang his hat on. Clearly, Justin Herbert knows the scheme. He's throwing the ball more efficiently than he ever has in the last last 5 weeks or so. He looks good. He looks like he's got command of it. It's just the cattle. It's a building year. And it's not slandering the roster, but it is that you're picking up Tommy Tickett's players. You've got a very soft interior offensive line. You've got no tight ends. You've got no wide receivers, essentially. You've lost. What did I say offline? I think with Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler, and Gerald Everett, you're losing over almost 30 years of experience. That's you can't overcome that. I'm sorry, and replace it with what, 6, like 7 years of experience.
Not in one season.
Greg Roman for me. Some of the stuff Slater was pulling this week in the run game, I thought was really good. We seem to be running both ways. Yeah. What do you think, Andy?
Look, I'm a bit similar to you. I don't like to call it before, you know, I have a good sample space, and I don't want to jump and say that, you know, even though I did say that I think it looked great to start off with, and it has in recent weeks, and then it does fall away. I think that it was two major things. Dobbins going out of the game, which completely restricted the playbook. He had, what, 40 yards off six carries and 19 yards in the receiving game as well. And like I said, just compliments the sort of strength and force of Gus Edwards up the middle brilliantly. But that restricts the play action, that restricts the RPOs, all that sort of thing, because you don't then have a receiving back in Edwards or Haskins that's really reliable. In the moment, seeing Gus Edwards catch that ball that was 7 yards behind, great catch. What are you doing? But as the commentator pointed out that I didn't pick up on initially, if you know he had missed that and the ball didn't go out, it might have actually been a backwards pass and susceptible to a fumble and turnover. Anyway, but that's my point. And also, you know, you just have instances where one guy who has a track record of issues just goes out there and has as bad a day as you can. And it's unfortunate, not here to smash him, but yeah, there were some of those, like I said, I've stayed off social media this week, but some of the videos that I've seen, and it's rare for me to not know the direct reference, but there's a clip of a bloke sitting on the couch and it's either a friend or his girlfriend sitting on the chair and he goes, "Oh, you want a beer?" And he throws a beer to her and she has no arms. And he goes, "Oh shit, you don't have any arms." And I was like, yeah, that's probably how Herbert felt. But hey, look, I want to say it's great that he wants to believe in him and keep throwing him the ball. But it's really hard. It's a really jagged pill to swallow as a fan watching someone just have that kind of game where you're like, oh, this one. And then that third and six drop is just, well, no good.
This might be the bit of cold water that needed to be poured on Quentin Johnston, because there's been a lot of rave reviews, including by us, for how he's improved. But the tape doesn't lie, and they've used him in ways that I probably don't agree with. They have used him deep quite a lot, which is just not his game. And I know the last two games have not gone so well for him. This week, it's only the second time in the last 10 years that a receiver's had more than five targets but zero catches. So yeah, he still has little things to work on. But like, if we go bigger picture, we've been calling for this version of Justin Herbert, I think, for a long time, right? Mm. He now has the confidence to go one read, two read. If you're not open, I'm tucking and going with my legs.
It's awesome.
It's incredible to watch. His celebration protecting the ball after he scored the touchdown was superb. He's now catapulted himself to PFF's fourth-ranked quarterback in the NFL this year. He's only behind Lamar, Burrow, and believe it or not, Jaden Daniels is their number three. And he's had six games in a row with a PFF grade of 75. So if you think that the job of the OC and Jim Harbaugh was to get this version of Justin Herbert, I think the rest will slowly take care of itself with Joe Ortiz.
We've done this podcast now for 3 years. And perhaps when we first started, we'd be like, oh, we need a new OC. But could you imagine this roster with Joe Lombardi just running sticks every day with Quentin Johnston and Ladd McConkey and Jalen Reagor? We'd be going, this is ridiculous. Just be aware that I think Greg Roman's shown enough in terms of play calling. There's been a flea flicker. There's been some interesting things. There hasn't been endless end arounds like Kellen Moore tried to do, trying to get 2 yards. There's been some creativity, especially in the run game. Just relax. And speaking of the run game, I did want to touch is that I thought the offensive line played, again, quite well, especially Zion Johnson, who seems to have now put together two very good weeks in a row. Justin Herbert was only pressured on 26% of his dropbacks. So that's very, very manageable against a very nasty and stingy pass rush. So things are just clicking. Things are slowly in place, but unfortunately with a roster in a first year like this, it's like one step forward, two steps back. You can't have it all. And again, we lost this game by one score. It wasn't two scores, three scores. I never thought we were completely out of it until maybe 10 minutes to go in the last quarter. I think we're okay.
Can I point out the one thing? Like, we've sung some praise for Roman. The one thing I would focus on is it is Herbert's highest average depth of target ever. It's over 10 yards with his throws for his targets. However, it's also his highest pressure to sack conversion rate by a large margin. So 28% of the pressures on Herbert result in sacks. In previous years, that's been as low as 14%. So
yeah,
28%,
but
14. I think they're trying to push the ball too far down the field a bit without those outlets.
But you have to look at, you can't just look at that and say, I think Justin Herbert's pass to sack ratio is higher because he's taking care of it a lot better because he's only thrown one INT. Okay. Yep. So you've got to look at it in the context of that. Justin Herbert's taking more sacks, but he's actually not throwing any interceptable balls.
His turnover-worthy play rate is higher this year than it's been in previous years. I know
interception. But he's only thrown one interception.
I know. Yeah. I agree.
There is a world as well where he can just throw the ball away rather than lose 5 or 6 yards on the play. And, you know,
late into the down, doesn't it? He doesn't turf the ball. Like you use the analogy of Tom Brady, Jack, and it can be dispiriting for the defense where they're like, I'm about to get him. Shit, he's thrown it into the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
He could pick that up.
Because what that does is, you know, it puts you 5 or 6 yards back and you're 3rd and 13, 3rd and 15, whatever. And then you are forcing it, or then Roman injects like an underneath and you get 9 yards where you need 16 before you punt. And you're like, where was that on the early downs rather than having two goes and nothing on the intermediate or the short in the middle of the field? But look, like we said, can't have it all. And it's unfortunate that the avenue that we went for a sort of receiving tight end has kind of been a bust for the team, and the surprise is Will Dissly. And I mean, he's
credit to him too. Like Jack says, there's no tight ends in the room, and you did call he would be good, mate. He's not just been good; he's been fairly close to excellent. Like,
yeah,
top 10 tight end in the NFL. Harsh, he's been very, very, very good this year.
Yeah,
no, Jack's gonna ride this. Jack said, I believe. With my Rain Man brain, that Jack said he would have the most receptions for the team. And that was it. Yeah. That was all he said. So unless that's right, you're wrong.
It's not, but he's probably second. We'd have to check it.
I think McConkey, yeah.
It's very impressive. He knows football, Jack. Jack knows ball.
I got really scared and I couldn't think of any wide receivers. That's probably testament to who we had in the room.
One thing before we move over to the defensive side of the ball, because there's a little bit to break down there. We talk about like Jalen Reagor being on the field and, you know, being active over DJ Chark. Receivers went 4 of 9 on contested targets. McConkey and Reagor were the only two to actually haul a couple in. Palmer and Johnson, 0 from 2 each. Reagor's probably the guy that would go for Chark. Do either of you, and contested catches is kind of Chark's thing, do either of you have any input, thought on why he's not playing? Do you say that it's a black and white, he should be playing over Reagor? What are your views on it? Because it's becoming a bit of a side story, a side quest for what the problems are and how do we fix them as fans?
I'll be very quick before you answer, Alistair. It's very hard to know if you're not in the room because Harbaugh's not going to give you anything. I find it peculiar that Jalen Reagor is winning over a healthy Chark. Is it relationship with Herbert? Who knows? But I'd love to see what Chark brings, because we know what Jalen Reagor brings and it's not much. I know he's made some interesting catches and things like that, but you know, I'd like to see Chark out there if it was me.
And I dare say he'll be there this week. Popper asked him about it again today. And the answer from Jim was a little more reading between the lines. He'll play. You know, we're looking forward to seeing him. Will he be active this week? Or potentially. It was closer to an answer confirming that he would be in. My guess is it might be as simple as the team was winning. They were on a win streak. The guys who were in were playing well and don't fix what ain't broke. And then this week we've seen 17 targets to Reagor, QJ Palmer, 17 targets, 5 catches, 58 yards. And it's as simple as, okay, now there's a spot. Go Chark, have your opportunity. I don't hate that, right? It's not like DJ Chark is Jamar Chase.
No.
He's a veteran free agent who's moved around from team to team, but I do think he could bring something to the offense. So the defense did play a football game this weekend, and 30 minutes in, Andy, let's flip to Jesse Minter's side of the ball, the more successful side of the ball this year. Where do you want to start off?
For me, I think, you know, we spoke a lot about on offense personnel or lack thereof, and I think it was really clear that Denzel Perryman was missed greatly. Puna Ford, Tia Tart, fantastic. Awesome work in the middle, but we just couldn't. Khalil Mack was quiet. Bosa had a couple of tackles, but he looked quiet. He didn't show up. But Nick Neiman looked tiny, and he wasn't bad either, but he isn't the human missile that Denzel Perryman is. And for me, the game changed when Derrick Henry got on a run, and he had a few of them. He had four of the team's 5, 10-plus yard rushes, 140 total yards from 24 carries at 5.8 per clip, 101 yards after contact. So, look, we know you can't bring this guy down, but that's just crazy. Four missed tackles forced. So he's also just getting into space and going untouched for a large part of it. 9 first downs.
I love Jack's comment. DBs and linebackers trying to tackle him is like Jack's one-year-old Molly trying to stop him from getting a beer. It ain't happening.
I mean, the thing that I thought Puna and Tia Tart did their job, and I said offline, God, heaven be the day that we have an interior that actually is stingy against the run. And against the Ravens, dare I say, with Derrick Henry, they were exceptional. So I just had a look at where the yards on the ground came from. And of the 212 total rushing yards, 147 of those occurred when Derrick Henry, or what's his name? Is it Justice Hill? I think yep. Justice Hill yeah. bounced outside, running outside the tight ends. So if anything, that just shows me that interior, really, really stingy. The edges were a little bit soft. So Mack, Bosa, Tooley, you know, I don't think they play poorly, but it just goes to show that we just don't have to face a Derrick Henry-led rushing attack. The secondary players just don't have the size. And when you've got like players like Tahib Steele and Molden, these guys, even Diane Henley to a point, is not a big linebacker. He's more of a side-to-side. He's fast. It just was that they just absolutely pounded us into the turf. And again, it's personnel. We don't have the flexibility on our roster to go, oh, we're missing one big banger. That pretty much exposes the entire sort of secondary, that linebackers in our DBs. So, yeah, very unfortunate, but we fought well.
We're Australians. We have to mention him. The Ravens' right guard, Daniel Falele, from Melbourne, Victoria, our home city. 6'8", 380 pounds. The man was a lead blocker, kick out blocking. Where I differ slightly from you guys, I thought Tooley, Mack, Bosa set a pretty good edge in this game. But I agree that the real issue was the second and third levels. And it takes more than one guy to bring down the king. And like you said, Jack, Jasir, Molden, Gilman, Neiman, Troy Dye, good luck deconstructing Jesse Minter. Block deconstruction. It sounds great as a pillar until you've got a 380-pound fat ass in your face, picking you up and throwing you backwards onto the ground, and King Henry just ploughing for multiple 140-odd yards. So, yeah, look, bringing it again to the numbers, it is something to work on. The Chargers' defense is 29th in the NFL in net yards allowed per rush attempt. So 4.8 yards for every rush against us. For a team that does like to play two high safeties, it is very Staley-esque in that respect. He wants to play two safeties and a light box and still stop the run. It's worked against some teams, but overall, we're 11 games in and we're 29th in the NFL. We might need to make some changes there, Jack, against the better teams.
I just think that's Jesse Minter's just doing the best that he can with the cattle that he's got. It's kind of the Roman argument again, right? And perhaps he's been able to hide those deficiencies a little easier than perhaps Roman has. But, I mean, how many teams are you going to come up against that have an exceptional rushing weapon at quarterback and then a guy who's arguably having an MVP season? You've got two MVPs in the back there, right? There's probably Saquon Barkley, there's Bijan Robinson, and then you pretty much got Derrick Henry, 112 kilos, 6'3". Yeah, it's crazy. Just met against boys. And Daniel Falele, you bring it up. As I said earlier in the pod, the interior size of those men is just huge. I didn't think we had a chance, to be honest.
I will say these are decisions, though. So when you play two high safeties, you're deciding that you want to stop explosive passes. I thought in this game we did do more single high safety with a second safety up in the box. It definitely did more of it. So I'm not saying that's what he did. But these days in the NFL, teams want to live in their nickel package. So five defensive backs on the field at all times and only two linebackers. You do that at your peril against heavier set teams. And we think, hey, what we'll do is we'll cheat. We'll have two linebackers and we'll have Derwin as a quasi third linebacker. But Derwin's still not a linebacker size. So we were deciding to play with lighter teams. But to your point, Jack, do we really have enough big, hefty linebackers on the roster to play three linebackers on the field without Perryman, without Coulson? I would say no.
But what do you do? So I'll put it to you and may Andy chime in as well. Would you rather Derek Henry beat you on the ground, or would you rather... or would you rather Lamar Jackson beat you? And for me, it would be, let's see what Derrick Henry can do, because Lamar Jackson is an MVP. And you know what?
And we stopped Lamar.
He stopped Lamar on the ground. Yeah, on the ground. We didn't generate a lot of pressure.
15 yards.
We didn't generate a lot of pressure on him, though. And he was sailing balls. And they just found a way to win.
Is that really the philosophy you'd take, though? Let's see what Derrick Henry can do. The guy's just clocked 1,300 yards on the season, having scored a touchdown in almost every game so far.
Do the Lamar numbers then. I think the only difference
you could have done, like literally with the roster we have, was to go, do you know what? In this game, it is Troy Dye, Shaq Quarterman, and Deion Henley on the field. We're going three linebackers and Quarterman is playing instead of Jasir Tahib or whatever. So
yeah, good luck. Yeah, and Lamar Jackson has 140 yards on the ground.
I'm just saying that philosophy doesn't register with me, but like, I agree that we don't have the personnel to be able to stop everything. I think Lamar does a lot more with his feet when he notices that the coverage is tight and, you know, we're playing a light box and you draw the linebackers in. They overcommit, edge breaks down, something like that, Lamar will take off. To Al's point, credit to Thule and Mack. I said they were quiet, but, you know, they did a lot of work kind of off the ball to contain, which is great. But we just don't have... I just had this visual of, on that, I think it was 3rd or 4th and 1, where Henry's just stiff-armed Henley and then still Jack's just pushing his daughter over, going to the fridge.
Yeah.
And his missus, bang. Beer for me.
No Coulson, no Perryman. That makes a difference, right? Yeah. No Coulson, sure. No Perryman.
Yeah. Perryman's like our run D linebacker, who's a big, big body, big hitter, kind of one speed, one direction. Might have stopped him a little bit, maybe 120 yards for the King. Mm.
Just really quickly before we move, I thought that we only generated pressure at 15%. That's not good enough against Lamar Jackson. You're not putting him in uncomfortable situations. And that kind of led to that dominance, I think, as well on 4th down. You know, if Lamar Jackson's not under pressure, you feel like you've got them at the point of attack. You're holding them. Let's just go. Let's just, you know, instill the will against the opposition. That's great, man. The Ravens are a fucking great team, man. Yeah, they're a great team.
Yep. We'll bleep that F bomb out in post production. Don't worry, mate. Anything you saw from the third level of the defense? Because obviously we didn't have Cam Hart, who was missed. But look, 177 receiving yards across the board. It was a couple of issues in my eyes. Christian Fulton again, a little bit grabby. I thought that might have been kind of a hamstring sort of related comeback trust in his own body thing, but he just didn't really seem like he was getting his body in the right position, getting his head around to the ball. He was all up in the chest plate of Rashod Bateman on that touchdown catch. How are we feeling about this corner room? Because they have been maybe overachieving. And when you've got two fifth round rookies on in the group, to be performing at the rate that they were, it's a lot for me. It's a lot more noticeable when the vets have off days.
And losing Gilman for a number of weeks. It's only going to get more interesting. I don't have too much to say. Fulton was the one that I thought 2 weeks in a row now is sort of showing perhaps why he was a free agent and why we're able to grab him sort of off the free agent pile. But I mean,
yep.
up until that point, before he did his hammy, he's been playing really well and still just does his, like, tries to, I mean, I can't criticize a fifth round pick being asked to start at a cornerback position in the NFL. So what say you, Al?
Yeah, so Fulton's on my watch list because he had 3 penalties last week and 2 penalties this week. Could have come down with an interception in this game that would have been meaningful. Like, it was right in the bread basket, right deep in the end zone. You might vaguely remember running across the field.
I don't know, bread basket, damn. But it was
catchable. Yeah, okay. It was catchable. Thank you for stopping my excesses. It was not super easy, but you'd love to see him snag it. But that kind of highlights for me, there aren't a lot of players on the team right now who I feel comfortable with the ball in the air thrown deep. I don't like Gilman in that position. Fulton has shown that he doesn't get his head around and he gets grabby. Still is probably the guy I like, but he's playing a little closer to the line. So this was possibly the first week where we were exploited a little bit down the field, and they hit up soft zones against us quite nicely. They knew what was coming from Jesse Minter, and they found Zay Flowers. They found Mark Andrews. So both sides of the ball, guys, it was an almost performance. We played a great team, but they were the superior team after the first quarter and just ground out the victory.
Yep, agreed. Anything further to add on defense before we move into the latter half? All right, we'll get into the awards. I've got the year nah this week. We've pretty much discussed the whole thing. There's no two ways you could look at it this week. People have bad games. You can have the majority of the weeks on the up after a rookie camp, after a tough rookie campaign, and then literally drop the bundle. It's important to note this loss was not solely on Quentin Johnson, but 5 targets, 0 receptions. That's Travis Benjamin areas, and we don't like that. 0 receptions, 3 drops. Ain't a pretty stat line when you're playing as the number 1 or the number 2 in Herbert's passing offense. So yeah, on the season so far, but like Al said, a nice bucket of cold water, nah, for Monday Night Football on that number 1 QJ.
Yeah, if we had a nah nah award, that was QJ. And a point we made on Twitter but haven't made on the podcast, it's not the first drop. It's the fact that he completely lost his confidence and then got another chance and dropped it again and then got another chance and dropped it again and then slipped on a route and then hung his head in shame.
He slipped a lot as well. The color commentators were like, oh, he looks like he slipped again.
That's the more concerning part when you're trying to build. It's year one, Harbaugh saying, who are these championship caliber players? Is that the guy you want? Imagine if that happened in a Super Bowl. Fuck me. All right.
I should have kept Cornelius. God damn it.
I'll go with the Now Year Award this week, and I'm giving it to Puna.
Yeah, boy.
What's the Now, you might ask? Well, before we signed Puna Ford, I saw in his data that he's always been a better player when he plays in the A-gap between the center and the guard. His bad years always came when he played the B-gap. I saw, though, the way Minter used him the first 5 weeks, he's predominantly a B-gap player. So I was thinking, we're using Puna in the way that the bad teams used him and he didn't play well. Well, there's a difference between good coaching and bad coaching, and Minter does not use an A-gap defender very often. What has Puna done this season? Right now, his season grade per PFF is 82.4. Where does that rank him amongst defensive tackles, you might ask? 4th out of 140. Who's ahead of him? Cameron Hayward, Dexter Lawrence, Chris Jones. He's ahead of DeForest Buckner, Jalen Carter, Jeffrey Simmons, Quinnen Williams, Vita Vea. One of the all-time great free agent signings, Puna Ford. Nah, yeah, my friend. Bring it on. Jack.
Just quickly before you get into it, Jack, after mentioning Dexter Lawrence, have you got a little sexy Dexy dance there?
That's worse than Eli's. If you're on audio, do not jump onto YouTube to watch that.
Yes. Way worse than Eli Manning's.
Okay. This week's Teachable Moment brought to you by We Few, We Happy Few, We Band of Brothers. The Chargers' recent loss to the Ravens mirrors the lessons of Agincourt in vivid historical detail. Like the French Knights of 1415, who stood proudly undefeated in their own tournaments and displays of might, the Chargers held a formidable 6-0 record against losing teams this season. These early victories seem to promise unending triumph, but just as those French Knights discovered, there is a stark difference between dominance in the expected and the unforeseen. The twist of fate? Both sides of this battle at Agincourt were, in a way, family. Just as the French and English kings were bound by blood and lineage, distant relatives locked in a struggle for supremacy, the Harbour brothers found themselves on opposing sidelines, driven by the same fierce spirit. This was not just a battle of teams, but a duel between brothers, reminiscent of the tangled familial loyalties that so often characterized the history of these medieval monarchs. It was a reminder that even shared bloodlines cannot soften the edge of competition when glory is at stake. Back to the battle. At Agincourt, the French knights, encumbered by their heavy armour, deep in the mud, and expecting yet another battle on their own terms, were met by an opponent who redefined the rules. Henry V's army, outnumbered and in a desperate position, leveraged adaptability, terrain, and ingenuity. The English archers, armed with the famous English longbow and stationed in the muddy fields, forced the French to face not just an enemy, but the unpredictable nature of the battle itself. The French, though skilled, were overwhelmed because they expected a straightforward victory, but encountered a challenge that demanded versatility and resilience instead. The Battle of Agincourt serves as a potent reminder. The greatest victories require flexibility, humility, and the ability to think beyond conventional strengths. The Ravens exposed the Chargers' vulnerabilities by not playing into their strengths, demanding that they learn how to adjust quickly, to innovate, and to fight on different terms. Just as the French Knights realized that experience alone wasn't enough without adaptability, the Chargers must evolve to confront opponents who challenge them in unexpected ways if they hope to turn these challenges into triumphs. Class dismissed.
Yes. Oh, man. Picturing Jim Harbaugh as like a French Charles VI is just fucking ridiculous. So is John Harbaugh as Henry Monmouth. But, mate, you keep diving. You're getting further and further back in time almost. I'm waiting for some Assyrian, like, antiquity stuff.
I was going to go to Sparta for this one, but I didn't. I sort of kept it in the Middle Ages.
I can't wait until you get to the Permian mass extinction, personally. Like that's going to be a really good
day. Mungo Man and all that, yeah.
And we've lost all our listeners.
Yeah. 3 hours later. All right, we move on to week 13, heading over to Atlanta to take on the Atlanta Falcons. Now, despite the loss, the belief within the coaches and the playing group couldn't be more positive in my eyes. The belief in what they are capable of, the resolve that emanates after a disappointing result is fantastic and refreshing. Look, you can only take the good things out of situations like this, so it's really good to see that, you know, they're still gelling together. Coach, players, everyone. There's a lot of belief, win, lose, or draw. Over to the injuries. Cam Hutt, he got through the concussion protocol only to be laid inactive due to an ankle issue. Important to watch how that progresses over the course of the week. Of course, we've spoken about J.K. Dobbins, who has sprained his MCL. We saw him leave the field in the second quarter, spent considerable time in the locker room, sat out the rest of the game in quite a chunky knee brace. Eli Apple injured his hamstring. He has been put on injured reserve, tried and tested, and the apple is rotten. Have you got an apple?
Unbelievable.
We're doing props now. Fantastic.
William Tell over here.
And of course, we mentioned the knee injury to Aloi Gilman, which couldn't come at a worse time as the team waived safety AJ Finley, who has since been claimed off waivers by the Seahawks in a corresponding move, which is, you know, nothing too exciting, but it's not bad. It's a Hortiz move. It's just that extra ingredient just to spice things up. The Chargers have signed veteran safety Marcus May. He's played 5,450 snaps since being drafted by the Jets in 2017. Significant experience in Salah's defensive system, utilizes safeties in a similar manner to Minter, and most recently played a role in Weaver's Baltimore system in Miami. So the team is going to look to him and Tony Jefferson as primary replacements, as Jesse Minter has been running three safeties as much as any other coach in the NFL. So on to the next one we go. as I said, the Chargers head on the road for the first of two straight away games. First stop, the 6-5 Falcons. And the Falcons are an interesting one. Leading up to the Week 12 bye, the Falcons dropped back-to-back games, 2017 at New Orleans, and then a shocking 38-6 loss to Denver at Empower Field. They hold a 3-3 home record, and it's really kind of hard with all the weapons that Kirk Cousins has in front of him. It's really hard to know. So my first opening headline is, which Falcons offense are we going to get? Like I said, boasting Kirk Cousins, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts. Still very hit and miss, but the potential is room for concern, having seen what the Chargers allowed. We didn't actually point this out, but that is the first time that Jim Harbaugh has ever conceded 200 yards rushing against in his, I believe, in his entire coaching career. So, wow.
My first headline, the Chargers are going to be battling more than just the team opposite them. My headline is Chargers cross-country sprint. Can Herbert bolt past arrested Falcons squad? Because we are at a quite severe rest disadvantage here, because we're coming off a short rest from a Monday game, and we are also traveling West Coast to East Coast. Will Herbert be ready to go? Will the team be ready to go? Or is this going to be another Arizona showing? And I'm a little bit worried about that, because last time we played away, we really kind of, I thought, was the only game we didn't turn up for. So it's going to be up to the coaching staff and all the front office to make sure players are rested, know what they're going, they're supported in their in this little mini road trip, and see what happens.
It's such an excellent point, and I love it, Jack. You take us down the intangible path. We'll have to ask Kev Diego, who's Atlanta-based, how he feels about being referred to as the East Coast in Atlanta, Georgia, but see if those travel factors make a difference. I'm going to take a risk here, and they say you shouldn't bring race into any kind of podcast, but, you know, I'm a white guy, so I can say, never go full white boy on defense. And this is my personal philosophy, that in the modern NFL, one or two white players on defense is okay, but you don't want multiple on the same line, on the same level of the defense. And the Falcons have Nate Landman and Caden Ellis at the linebacker position, and Troy Anderson from Montana State as the third linebacker. And guess what? Against the Broncos, those two were targeted 10 times, allowing 9 catches, 97 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So you break the rules, never go full white boy, and you will find yourself in big, big trouble.
So that's the headline. Apple back in your mouth.
Attack them frequently. They struggle, especially Landman in coverage. They're better against the run. That's where Herbert should be looking to bolster his MVP case.
Yeah. For me, it's another big day needed for Puna and Tart. The Poo-Tart, 61% of all rushing yards for the Falcons have been to the right side of the line. That said, Bijan is a guy who does explore the left as well. Heavy runs behind gun right guard Chris Lindstrom and right tackle Caleb McGarry. Boys, got to get that push.
Yep, off the back of that, Andy, I've got Bijan ready to run right as aggressive Falcons face leaky Chargers. Weirdly enough, Bijan Robinson has a higher PFF grade than Saquon Barkley, who's an MVP front runner, and just a slightly worse grade than Derrick Henry. So if I'm Atlanta and I've seen what happened against the Baltimore Ravens last week, he had 20 carries against New Orleans. He's going to be fresh. And the Falcons have also been quite aggressive on fourth down. I think they're ranking in the top three in fourth down aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Raheem Morris looked at last week and saw the success on fourth down is going to be shying away from making any bold decisions. So I tell you what, this game is set up to be a bit of a disaster for the Chargers, but we'll wait and see.
All right, moving on to keys to victory. I think we simply protect the king to win this chess match. The Falcons' pass rush has been impotent all year. Their pressure rate on Bo Nix last week was a meager 17%. The names they have as pass rushers, we know Matt Judon, but they're guys like Arnold Ebiketti, Lorenzo Carter, Grady Jarrett is older. So I think if Herbert is protected, if the offensive line plays like it did against Baltimore, this defense for the Falcons is way too bad for the Chargers to lose this game. They rank 25th in points allowed, 29th in passing TDs allowed, 30th in third down percentage allowed. They've basically got Jesse Bates, AJ Terrell, Justin Simmons, and that's it. So protect the king. Stampede to victory is my key to victory.
Yeah, I love the angle of attacking the defensive backs and the pass game. I also don't think that their run defense is that crash hot from a line standpoint. So even though it'll be Kamani and Gus Edwards, we're not going to get a whole lot of receiving kind of options out of the backfield. I still think Greg Roman sticks to his guns and maintains a balanced offense. It's a big key for me for keeping the ball, keeping the drive, keeping the possession going, the drives going, and points on the board.
Biggest key.
Get some stickum on QJ's hands.
Yeah, biggest key to overall victory, both on the field and off the field, is let's get the ball to Quinton Johnson as early as possible. Like we did in the preseason, just feed him the ball. Feed him the ball. Get a couple of catches. All of a sudden, it'll be fine.
He's not going to be inactive, Jack, for Chark.
All right, Bill.
All right, result predictions. I'll start us off. You can go next, Jackie boy. I have the Chargers, who are a very good team, beating this Falcons team that have been hit or miss, including at home, as you said, Andy, 3-3 there. So Chargers 27, Falcons 14, a two-score win over in Atlanta.
I'm going 34-31 Atlanta win.
Whoa.
I just don't think we can overcome the what happened last week, and I think we might be a bit shaky. I'm going off what happened in Arizona.
Can't wait to read the messages coming out of your phone on Monday. Boy, oh boy, that phone is getting turfed into the next suburb.
I'm what Athea has to say about Jack in the comments.
Oh, actually, thanks for mentioning that. Athea, I am waiting. You said you were coming at me for predicting that the Ravens would win. A tip with my head, not my heart. I hate to say that I was right, but I will accept apology in any way, shape, or form. I'll provide you a PO box. You can send me a jersey. That would be great. Thanks,
so
mate.
Good.
Keep listening to the show. You're awesome. I am predicting the Chargers bounce back 27-18, getting it done over the Falcons. So there we have the result prediction. And look, guys, as it is Thanksgiving in the land of the United States, we wish you all a very happy holiday. And I'll open up the around the NFL headlines. It's great that the NFL provide such entertainment on what is probably, I mean, I'm speculating, but what may be, you know, the most important kind of family holiday over in the States. You light your fireworks on the 4th of July, but Thanksgiving is, you know, everyone just travels across the country to be with their family. Perfect opportunity for you guys to chuck the podcast on in the car, on the drive, download the show on Spotify before you jump on the plane and head back on the other side of the country. Appreciate you all. Three games.
Leave a review.
So what better than an NFL headline or two to be thankful for? And three games throughout the day would do it pretty well, I'd say. Bears versus Lions is an appetite fit for any football fan. Is Caleb Williams anything more than cold pumpkin pie about to have the stuffing kicked out of him by Jared Goff? Then you've got, appropriately, Cowboys. I have to sneak them in, of course. Cowboys versus Giants. Primetime post-lunch nap. Just quietly. I'll actually lay off the boys this week because what a shitstorm it is in New York. Getting rid of Saquon, paying Daniel IC Dead People Jones $160 million only to turf him, and then drafting a crybaby wide receiver from LSU. So if you really think that Alton McConkey is a worse move than taking Neighbors at 5, then I'd love to fight back when I don't respond to your comments on Twitter. Credit to Baker Mayfield as well for the most obnoxious celebration taunting Tommy DeVito with the babadabubity. That was fantastic. Before everyone gets second wind at the end of the day, Dolphins versus Packers, that's going to be a cracker. AFC team on the push with a healthy quarterback. Packers are doing their thing, but still amazingly sitting third in the NFC North, but are keeping in touch with the Lions and Vikes. And Packers, Dan, my man, We'll be rooting for you. Should be a cracking way to kick off the week, so happy holidays to all.
You mentioned him, Andy. I have been very much enjoying watching Saquon Barkley just enjoy his football. It seems to be every single broadcast that I watch, there's the sideline reporter saying, oh, I spoke to Saquon Barkley, and he says he can be himself here. He can be himself, and he's just happy, and he's playing, and he's so happy. If that is not an indictment on what's going on in New York at the moment, I don't know what is. They seem to be copping absolute. Was it, what was the show? Was it Hard Knocks? Which one where they're in the room and they're going, oh, do we re-sign Saquon? Do we not? Etc. Yep. That's just blowing up in their face. They're at sea. And I feel a bit sorry for Brian Daboll as well, a little bit, because I think he's a fantastic play caller. But I don't know if he's going to get a chance to go again in New York, but it'll be interesting.
If I was Mara, I would back in Daboll, give him a chance with another.
And I think Mara has said that as well. I don't think Daboll's going anywhere.
Yeah. My headline, I love decision-making. I love head coach decision-making. I won't ask you guys, but let me know, listeners, in the comments what you would have done in the Commanders-Cowboys game last week.
Oh.
You had this wild finish, Kevontae Turpin with a ridiculous spin return touchdown, and then in a touchdown pass that was redolent of the Minneapolis miracle, Jaden Daniels hits Terry McLaurin for an 80-yard strike. All of a sudden, with basically zeros on the clock, you're down by 1 point as Dan Quinn and the Commanders. Do you take the extra point to go to overtime, or do you go for two? And of course, your quarterback's Jaden Daniels. You've got Terry McLaurin. But on the other side, you've got Cooper Rush as the quarterback for the Cowboys. So these are what seasons turn on. Do you think we're the better team, so let's go to overtime? Or do you go one play from the 2-yard line against this defense that's been crap all year with Mike Zimmer? What they decided to do was go for the extra point. Austin Seibert, who had already missed a field goal in the same game, misses the extra point. So Commanders go on a bit of a losing streak now. Let us know what you would have done. Go for two or the extra point. It's not an easy decision.
No kick is ever a certain thing, is it? But crazy. It was like 13-9 with 5 minutes in regulation to go, and that score ended up 34-26. So I'll say it again. Cooper Rush is him, guys. He's the answer. Oh, very good. Well, hopefully, like I said, hopefully you all have a really great holiday weekend, and the Chargers get a win. Who's got it better than us, baby? On that, we'll see you next week on the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. See ya.
Top of the evening to you, Governor.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Woo! Good night to all!